For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Welcome back to Columbo and Katie on 101.9 and 94.1 News Talk STL. As I mentioned at the end of that last segment, joining us now on the phone, back on the show, is the Chief Communications Officer at the America First Policy Institute and former Special Assistant to President Donald Trump, Mark Lotter, is back with us. Mark, always appreciate your time. How's it going this afternoon?
It's going great. How are you guys?
We are well. A whole lot going on out there to talk about. So I can't remember where we were in this saga. I want to start with just the latest with the Trump Mar-a-Lago raid situation. We've now seen the redacted affidavit come out. We've seen some legal action taken by the Trump by the Trump team. We've seen this this new judge that wants to appoint a special, I can't remember what they call it, a special master or something like that. Yeah, special master to take a look at things. But suddenly the Justice Department, I made this point yesterday in the show, it's amazing how fast the government can move when it wants to. Like, normally you would think, like, something like this, an unprecedented raid on a president's house where they take all these documents and it'll take months to go through all this stuff and see what we have and understand this. And this judge comes out and, like, hey, I want to appoint a special master to take a look at this. And the DOJ is like, no, we're already done. We already looked at it all. We got it. We'll let you know what we found in a couple of days. Like, well, when you're motivated, you can move awfully quick there. So just the entire thing's a mess. The entire thing's a joke. What's your latest analysis and thoughts on this whole process?
Well, I think, especially as this latest saga unfolds, you know, it's not just the speed at which they did it. I believe it's actually the underlying reason why they did it. Because before a judge says no, you're not to go through this because there could be, and there has been reporting that there was attorney-client privileged information of the former president that was confiscated. They have already reviewed it before a judge could tell them, you are under orders not to review it, and I will have a neutral third party go through and say, here's what the police can see, and here's what the police can't, because that's what the FBI is. Let's not make that, be very clear.
Sure.
You know, and there are things where, you know, you are protected by your attorney-client privilege. There is obviously executive privilege. There's other things that could be involved. But the FBI did this so quickly because they wanted to see it all before a judge could say, no, let's only let you see what you're allowed to see. They've now seen it all, and they get to be the arbiters and decision makers of, A, what does the public get to see? But we actually got to see all that information, take it all in, file it, and use it, whether we were allowed to see it or not.
Mm-hmm. And how about this? So, before we move on, so what do you anticipate the next steps to be? And as we keep asking ourselves, what do they think are they going to accomplish from this? How long until this whole thing plays out, and how long until it just fizzles out to being a big nothing burger like every other investigation or hearing or charge brought against Trump has been?
Yeah, I would assume it'll fizzle out around November 9th.
Right.
and until then, it will be trial by leak in the court of public opinion.
Right.
That's what they do. You know, they tell you that the media, the general public, we don't have a right to know all these information except for the strategically placed leaks from the New York Times and the Washington Post and MSNBC and CNN. And they get the stuff, the cherry picked stuff. It's almost like the January 6th committee, but it's being run by, it's being run by the FBI because you only get to see the information they want you to see. And you don't get any defense. You don't get any pushback. There's no cross-examination. There's no, here are five other documents that say, that that's not true. It's just a one-sided affair being played out, masterfully by the politically motivated people at the highest levels of the FBI.
Yeah. Speaking of controlling the message and controlling the media and controlling the narrative and the stories before an election, how about this bombshell dropped by Mark Zuckerberg to Joe Rogan, admitting that ahead of the 2020 election, the FBI told Facebook to watch out for possible Russia propaganda, advising them to be vigilant because something was about to come out. As a result, Zuckerberg admitted that Facebook limited the visibility of articles about Hunter Biden's laptop because the FBI told him to. That's incredible. I mean, it's not surprising. We've all figured out what exactly was done by the powers that be leading into the investigation or leading into the election, especially when it comes to the Biden laptop situation. But to now just hear the people involved coming out and just plainly admitting it is shocking, and hopefully getting through to the American voter about how disingenuous the media was heading into that election.
Well, it doesn't surprise me. Obviously, I was on that campaign. I was the director of strategic communications for the re-election campaign. So I spent a lot of time talking about that, to no avail. And God help you if you actually put something online about it, because you'd be censored, you'd have your account suspended, or you would be throttled back by the algorithm.
Mm-hmm.
But this just shows you, I think twofold. Number one, that big tech is colluding with the left to basically manipulate the outcomes of elections. And they did it in 2020. Obviously, they did it in 2016. They are doing it again, right now as we speak, through what they're doing, obviously, with the Mar-a-Lago raid and such. But you've got the federal government. You have the Department of Justice now colluding with big tech to censor, to throttle. That's not their job. It's the American people's job. It's the American people's job to read the report. Believe it, don't believe it, ask tough questions about it. That's where true reporters are supposed to be. I started my career in radio and television as a journalist. And your job as a journalist is to ask those tough questions, not just make the whole thing go away. And yet nobody did. And the mainstream media really needs to be asking themselves, and they're not, but they really need to be asking themselves about their role in this, that they fell for this, and that they were a party to manipulating the outcome of an election. And if you're truly a journalist and not just a liberal hack, then the only answer could be is that you sacrificed your journalistic integrity to get an election outcome you preferred.
Mark, there. Speaking of Joe Rogan, yesterday I read a story that over the weekend, he was speaking with Aaron Rodgers on the Joe Rogan Experience, and he was telling Aaron Rodgers what people need to do is vote Republican if they don't want the insanity of what happened with COVID, such as the lockdowns, masking in schools, pushing vaccines. Vote Republican if you don't want to see something like that happen again, and to kind of get this world back to some kind of law and order. And I thought that was so interesting because Joe Rogan has never been a Republican. He said now that if Ron DeSantis were to run, he would vote for Ron DeSantis. But he is a notorious liberal. And I'm wondering, from your perspective, do you see a lot of moderate Democrats feeling the same way as Joe Rogan? And how important is it, or how impactful is it, to see people like Joe Rogan, like Bill Maher, in the media who are traditional liberals say, our party is not heading in the right direction, and if you do want to make some change, you might want to vote red this time around?
No, I think it's hugely important. And I think it's also the continuation of something that really started under Donald Trump. I remember being on the campaign in 20, but also in 16. We would go into like union country, blue collar auto workers in Michigan, in Missouri, in Pennsylvania, and places where we would normally not be, because it's not traditionally Republican areas. And you saw all of the faces out there, and they were nodding in agreement with what we were saying. Because for the first time in a while, I think, and I've said this many times, I think the 2016 election was not just about Donald Trump as the man. I think it was so many people of both political parties saying, I'm tired of being lied to for the last 30, 40 years by politicians of both parties. whether it was Bill Clinton or Barack Obama, George W., whomever, saying, I'm going to fix NAFTA, but never doing it. I'm going to get tough with China so they stop stealing our jobs, but never actually doing it. I'm going to stop getting us into endless wars, but we're actually not going to do that. And for both sides did it. And Donald Trump became the you know, the embodiment of, you know what, enough with these politicians. I'm going to tell you what I'm actually going to do. Then I'm going to get in there and do it. And now I see that we're starting to see that even with some of the, you know, moving up, you know, in the ranks in the liberal hierarchy with folks like Joe Rogan, Bill Maher, and others who are saying, you know, where the Democrat Party is going, is liberal, is progressive, socialist openly, you know, that they are becoming. They're not good with that. And so we might not always agree on every single policy, but most of the policies we do. And we believe in the Constitution. We believe in just the fundamental individual rights that we were born with. And let's get back to that. I don't need the government taking care of me. I can take care of myself.
Kind of tying these last two points together, not just members of the media like Bill Maher or Joe Rogan, but somebody like Mark Zuckerberg, who is a huge, you know, a CEO of one of the biggest tech companies in the world. Why go on Joe Rogan's show and say that you were told to do this by the FBI and then you did it and you throttled back information, did all the things that you mentioned a few minutes ago, Mark, to the people that would try to report on the Hunter Biden laptop story? Why admit it now? Is it an admission, you think, of like backing the wrong team and realizing that what they did was wrong? And back then they thought they were fighting the good fight against the big evil orange man. But now looking back, they were instead being pawns of the people that were actually the ones that were being shady and up to no good. Why admit it now? If not, that you're having a change of heart.
Yeah, I think in some ways, you know, I think there's probably some disgust with the direction that their companies or their brand was going. And so this was more of a warning shot going, we're not doing this again. It also wouldn't surprise me. I mean, let's remember that most of these uber rich billionaires, and I mean multi-billionaires, you know, who basically made their billions through the capitalist society, once they become billionaires, they become liberals because they feel guilty. So they give all their money away. You know, they get into these other causes. Bill Gates is one of them. Bezos, you know, that you rode capitalism and, you know, the Chamber of Commerce to becoming one of the richest people in the world. Now you feel guilty about it. So you're a liberal, so you can give it all away. So in this case, like, well, you know, I feel guilty for what I did. So I'm just going to confess to it and then admit it. So, excuse me. There's probably a lot of different reasons for it, but I think we have to use the opportunity. And I think we have to use the opportunity to make sure that it doesn't happen again.
Yeah.
It's not Facebook or Twitter's responsibility to censor what the American people see. It's our jobs.
It's our jobs to do our own research, make our own decisions with all the information available to us. Got a couple minutes left here with Mark Lauder from the America First Policy Institute. Made the announcement in the first segment of the show today that Joe Biden and the White House have announced that they are going to give a primetime address, something that is very rare for this president. He's going to go primetime on Thursday. And according to the White House, the reports that I'm seeing, the point of this speech, usually, you know, there's something big happening. There's some big policy announcement or there's some big something has happened in the world and they're addressing to some incident or some issue that's happened. But from what I see, they're basically, he's going on television on Thursday night in prime time to double down on this whole attack on MAGA Republicans in quote, and this semi-fascist claim, you know, label that he's given them. The White House says that the primetime address on Thursday, the president will argue that America's democracy remains under attack and highlight who's fighting to protect the nation's freedoms. I mean, really? We're going to go on television to double down on a name calling attack on the other side? I mean, we've seen a lot of weird stuff and a lot of unprecedented steps taken by this White House and this administration, but this just seems absolutely, I don't know if it's desperate or just strange, but the whole thing, this semi-fascist claim, mm-hmm. which is ridiculous and insulting and disgusting, and now we're going to go on national television in prime time to defend our own the statement and double down on it? What do you make of all
that? I mean, this is nothing different. I mean, this is what we've always known, whether we were called deplorables or, you know, or when Barack Obama was calling names, you know, that we were clinging to our guns and our Bibles. I mean, this is truly what the left thinks of the rest of America. But let me be one thing clear, and maybe we'll get the clip to the White House. Mr. President, I've got a word for you. You are worried about our democracy? Then talk about the 14 Democrats who objected to the 2000 election, or the 32 Democrats who objected to the 2004 election, or the 6 Democrats that objected to the 2016 election that Hillary said was stolen.
Mm-hmm.
Or how about the left who now calls the Supreme Court illegitimate because you didn't get a ruling that you wanted? We fought for 50 years when we got a ruling we didn't like. We didn't call them illegitimate. We went out and elected candidates, nominated justices and judges, and eventually got that overturned. You are the threat to democracy. That is what is actually going on. And until we stand up and say those things, and that's not a threat, that's just a fact.
Sure.
Until we start to stand up and say, no, this is, if you want to talk about election deniers, then talk about them on both sides, sir.
Yes. Amen.
If you want to talk about the threats to legitimacy, then fine. We're also going to talk about the threat to Justice Kavanaugh, the assassination attempt, or the leftist who shot and nearly killed Steve Scalise. It's a pox on mm-hmm. both parties.
Mm-hmm.
And until we actually stand up and defend that, then we're going to be playing defense on it.
It always blows my mind when people try to claim that Donald Trump and certain people on the right are the first people that ever questioned the results of an election fresh on the heels. Forget about how many times it's happened, you know, in our history, but just fresh on the heels of 4 years of Hillary Clinton saying that the 2016 election was stolen from her, that it was an illegitimate election, and Stacey Abrams saying that the election, the gubernatorial election in Georgia that she lost was illegitimate. This is something that the Democrats have been famous for in recent years. So that always blows my mind. I couldn't agree with you more. Mark, unfortunately, we're just about out of time. Before we let you go, an update on what you guys are working on at the America's First Policy Institute. And for people who are not familiar with the organization, how they can learn more about you and all the things you guys are working on.
Yeah, go to AmericaFirstPolicy.com. We've got 22 policy centers led by former senior White House officials or cabinet level officials from the Trump White House. We're actually putting the policy work into practice. So we're ready to go in 2023 and in 2025, you know, when we finally get America First leadership back in control in Washington. It's so great to work alongside all these former colleagues from the White House, from the administration, and we're getting ready. We're actually doing town halls all across the country. I'll be in Cincinnati next week doing a town hall. We were in Iowa. We were in New Mexico. So we're going to be out there talking about the policies because we know they worked. Regardless of what you thought of the president or his tweets or his tone, whatever, the one thing nobody can argue is that the policies worked.
Yeah.
America, so let's get it ready for the next generation, whoever that's going to be.
AmericaFirstPolicy.com. Mark Lauder, always appreciate your time and look forward to having you back on again very, very soon.
Talk to you guys soon.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. Thanks so much. All right. The National Border Patrol Council president put out a statement today saying that Karine Jean-Pierre is lying about what is happening at the border. That is
not surprised.
That is a stiff accusation. We'll get into that story in just a moment. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Columbo and Katie on 101.9 and 94.1 News Talk STL. Just like a
dragonfly. For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.